Today on Annenberg Radio News.
It's like, for a lot of women, it's like our Halloween has been taken away from us.
We meet a woman who is fighting for gender equality in Halloween costumes. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 31st, 2013. I am Ryan Bouzion. Today at the LA Memorial Sports Arena, the Care Harbor Clinic provided free health services for nearly 1,000 people. Danielle Tarasuk spoke with patients and providers at the event.
Stephen Wheel was released from prison 8 months ago. He says the health care he received during his 16 years behind bars left him with major dental problems.
I have cracked crowns. I have teeth. I have two teeth that were knocked out when I was in prison in a fight. And just my back teeth are killing me, and I need a partial.
Wheel is uninsured, like others at Care Harbor LA's free health clinic today. He and hundreds of others waited hours in line to get dental work and other health services. This is Care Harbor's fifth year organizing a free health clinic, but this year is different. It's the first time that the Affordable Health Care Act is available to the public. On one side of the LA Memorial Sports Arena are booths with information on the Affordable Health Care Act. People can also start the process of signing up for health insurance.
It is only health. It does not cover dental or vision, not just yet. They've said that they will add that in the future, but not right now.
Valerie Lopez is a lead health outreach worker for Covered California, a program that helps people sign up for affordable health care. Viola Owens is in a growing category of Americans who have government health insurance but aren't covered for dental and vision care.
Because I need a dental, I need to see a dentist like every year, at least every 6 months, so I can keep my teeth healthy.
If dental problems go unchecked, they can spread to the rest of the body, causing much bigger health problems. The dentistry section, ranging from basic fluoride to teeth cleanings and cavity fillings, occupy a large portion of the arena center. Dr. John Tukey, a semi-retired dentist, volunteers every year. He says he often sees gum decay in many of his patients from free clinics.
You can't do it all, you know, but you can help them out. Take care of the worst things.
Care Harbor LA's free clinic is a four-day event and will end on Sunday. Event officials expect that each day will be packed with at least 1,000 people. Danielle Tarasuk, Annenberg Radio News.
The first month of the open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act is now behind us. Even though healthcare.gov has been plagued with technical problems so far, one grassroots campaign is not afraid to combine technology and healthcare. Balu Tiansi learned about a phone app called Organizer, developed by the company Election Ear, which is helping canvassers to enter the digital age.
Using clipboards to sign people up for a cause may soon sound like a thing of the past. A smartphone is the device of the future.
We want to increase our efficiency in the field. So fumbling around with papers, even being environmentally cautious, right, and eliminating our carbon footprint is something that we're focused on.
That's Carla Zomboro, field director of California Calls. California Calls, a grassroots organization, is trying to revolutionize the way door-to-door campaigns operate by using smartphones. The application, which California Calls launched 2 days ago, is designed to work on Androids. It records real-time responses of people met by campaigners.
So far, we've already found the results, even though it's been the clunky first couple of days, have been higher with the people on the smartphones than the folks that are using the typical paper list.
From October 30th to November 10th, California Calls will be going door-to-door to educate and encourage voters to enroll in the Affordable Care Act.
Going door-to-door is slow, but it's the best way to have the best conversation with people.
Zumbero just hopes now that that convo will be a little more efficient. Balu Tijansi, Annenberg Radio News.
A Los Angeles Superior Court judge today refused to halt operations at the Sriracha chili sauce plant in Irwindale. Residents of the city have been complaining about strong fumes coming from the plant, which is run by Hui Fong Food. The judge denied to consider the request because more time would be needed to make the decision. He will rule on the city's request for a preliminary injunction on November 22nd. Irwindale City Manager John Davidson says they hope to work with Hui Fong Foods to find a solution.
We are encouraged to see that Hui Fong is working towards a solution that may employ the latest technology and science, if you will, in a filtration system. That's going to be a welcomed addition.
The company's lawyer told the judge that shutting down the plant now would interfere with efforts to figure out what's causing the smell. Air quality officials are also conducting tests. A woman's arm was found at the Joint Water Pollution Control Plant in Carson this morning. This marks the third time in a week that body parts have been found in the sewage system of Los Angeles. Detectives believe that all of the body parts belong to the same woman, but they have not yet been able to identify her. Community activists gathered outside the offices of BYD Motors today to protest alleged labor violations against the company's Chinese auto workers. Julian De Ocampo has more.
BYD is the namesake of one of the largest Chinese auto manufacturers in the world. It stands for Build Your Dreams, but those dreams are under scrutiny by a coalition of community protesters. The activists protested outside of BYD's North American headquarters today in South LA. The company is facing a bill of nearly $80,000 in fines and $20,000 in back wages after an investigation by the California Department of Industrial Relations. Selena Prince was one of many protesters outraged at BYD's labor policies.
So I think they can be trusted, they need to take away their contracts, and I think it's a bunch of bull.
The citations allege that BYD workers from China are paid $1.50 per hour with a $50 allowance each day. BYD claims the auto workers are technology experts receiving educational training. But protesters like Ernest Roberts believe that any worker in America, Chinese or not, should be paid under American wage laws.
I had a Korean worker that came here, a Korean national, high technical expertise. We paid him a wage that was consistent with what other people here were getting. We didn't pay him $1.50 an hour or anything like that. That's crazy. And we paid all the attorney fees to get him in here. And we're a nonprofit. If we can do that, certainly a multi-billion dollar corporation can do that.
BYD has a contract with the cities of Long Beach and Los Angeles to build a fleet of electric buses. Protesters called for this contract to be altered or nullified. Lawrence Zhou, a volunteer at the Chinatown Community for Equitable Development, believes that BYD needs to be educated that their employees are people with dignity.
Companies like BYD can't be coming in here and circumventing the law by kind of hiding their workers, you know, in these homes in the San Gabriel Valley, and then busting them in and then pay them low wages. And then, you know, it's the equivalent of slave labor. I mean, it's indentured kind of, you know, servitude.
BYD says it hopes to work with state governments to comply with state law. Julian De Ocampo, Annenberg Radio News.
Federal agents are investigating a major drug smuggling tunnel that's been discovered on the California-Mexico border near San Diego. Logan Healy has more about the discovery and how smuggling affects California's medical marijuana industry.
The tunnel was found last night by federal agents in Otay Mesa. Officials say they seized more than 8 tons of marijuana and 325 pounds of cocaine. Three suspects are in custody. More than 75 tunnels have been discovered along the U.S.-Mexico border since 2008. Tunnels like the one discovered yesterday are ventilated with lighted rail tracks and can be up to a half mile long. Some estimate Mexican cartels pocket $30 billion every year smuggling drugs into the U.S. The total might be close to $1 trillion since 1980. The demand for illegal drugs doesn't seem to be affected by an increasing number of states that allow pot. Washington State and Colorado legalized recreational marijuana use last year. California allows marijuana for medicinal use. But Caleb Mason, a former federal prosecutor and law professor, says for now, efforts in those states aren't enough to affect the Mexican cartels.
That as long as there's a market and as long as there is unimpeded production in South America and in Mexico, you're going to see importation through these corridors.
While states might allow it, there is still a federal ban on marijuana. Mason points out that many marijuana growers in the U.S. are probably benefiting from the federal ban because it keeps availability low and prices high. He says those domestic growers have an advantage over the Mexican cartels.
The best quality marijuana is the domestically grown American and Canadian marijuana. So it would probably be in the interest, I think, of American growers to have prohibition lifted so that they could openly compete on on quality.
Legalization or not, Mason says growers and users face constant uncertainty and potentially life-changing legal action. Even in states where some uses of marijuana are legal, federal agents could still decide to arrest people violating the federal ban.
It's going to have to be resolved. This is a major conflict between state and federal government. And at some point, we're going to have a, I think, some sort of statutory revision to the Controlled Substances Act.
Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his lab began to rise.
It's going to be a bit chilly for all you trick-or-treaters this Halloween night. Temperatures are expected to be in the mid-50s tonight, and this weekend it will be even colder, with evening temperatures in the 50s and daytime temperatures reaching only the mid-60s.
He did the monster from my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their...
Later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear about some fun activities with The Walking Dead.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
People who depend on food stamps will have less to spend starting tomorrow. That's because the government stimulus package that helped millions during the recession is now expiring. Grace Lim visited social services offices in Los Angeles to talk to those affected.
Single mother and nursing student Michelle Ross currently gets $798 a month on food stamps for herself and her four children. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, she'll be getting about $43 less starting next month.
Like right now, I probably have like $50 or probably I think less than that left on my food card, and we have like another week. So 40 something dollars, there's really no, like, I mean, there's grapes and milk in my refrigerator and cereal and stuff, but like, you know, we try to budget at the end.
The government is trying to get its own budget under control by decreasing funding to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. The 2009 Recovery Act actually boosted food stamp benefits to help those who were struggling during the recession and to encourage economic growth. Now that the recession has recovered somewhat, the stimulus bill is ending and food stamp benefits are going back to what they were before the recession. Retiree Sandra Calderon thinks the cut is
unfair because the people that really need it, like myself, you know, especially when you don't have a job, and you have a very low income, which is retirement, $375 a month, it's just too little.
Calderon, as a single person, receives $200 a month in food stamps and will get $11 less starting Friday.
A dollar is a dollar. If for someone that is not making money, for someone that is struggling, it makes a big effect.
Across the board, Congress wants to make more cuts to the food stamp program, but Republicans and Democrats are debating right now over how much. Food stamp dependents who are affected now may feel it even more if there is another cut down the line. Grace Lim, Annenberg Radio News.
If you're headed to a Halloween party tonight and you still haven't figured out what you're going to be yet, you might be facing the difficult task of coming up with a good last-minute costume. The search for Halloween costumes can be particularly hard for women, and as Catherine Davis reports, some women are looking to improve their options.
Halloween isn't really the night of ghosts and goblins that it once was, especially for women.
Halloween is the one night a year when a girl can dress like a total slut and no other girls can say anything about it. The hardcore girls just wear lingerie and some form of animal ears.
That was a clip from the movie Mean Girls, and though it's a parody, it's not far from the truth. I visited an LA Halloween store, and the women's choices there were pretty skimpy.
There's the pirate booty, very sexy pirate lady. There's the backdraft babe, very short version of a firefighter costume. And the buckskin beauty is a Native American, very short dress.
And the list goes on. In 2011, Halloween enthusiast and lover of women's history, Suzanne Scoggins, heard her female friends lamenting the pressure to show their skin on Halloween. And she decided she had had enough.
I would say, why don't you dress up as, you know, Athena or Demeter? And they say, but how? There's no costume for that. And I would say, you don't need to buy a costume. I will just tell you how to do it.
Scoggins decided to create a website called TakeBackHalloween.org. Her site doesn't sell anything. It just offers a list of costume ideas and simple instructions for putting the ensembles together yourself. No sewing required. You won't find any dirty nurses or Playboy bunnies on Scoggins' website, but you will find Amelia Earhart, Diana Ross, and Egyptian Queen Hatshepsut. In just 3 years, Scoggins' site has had millions of hits. She's had to upgrade servers to handle all of the traffic, and this year she launched a Kickstarter campaign just to cover the basic costs of maintaining the site. She says the response has been overwhelmingly positive.
It's like, for a lot of women, it's like our Halloween has been taken away from us.
And there's a reason some women feel that way. Lisa Wade, professor of sociology at Occidental College, says super sexy Halloween costumes say a lot about our society.
I mean, we often think about Halloween as like an unusual kind of day, but really, it's so normative. It's Halloween is such an example of everything that we're doing every other day, but much more exaggerated.
So Wade says it's no surprise that as society demands women comply with increasing standards of sexiness, Halloween has taken sexy to the extreme.
The problem is that women are told all the time that using their sexuality is a way to be empowered. But it's also the only kind of power we're really allowed to have, and that's not okay.
So with the enormous pressure the average woman faces to conform with society's hyper-sexualized trends, it may take a lot more than just Suzanne Scoggins' website to end objectification of women and bring gender equality to Halloween. But Scoggins says she's happy even if her Take Back Halloween movement has just a small influence.
I got an email yesterday from a woman who said, I haven't celebrated Halloween in 20 years. And she said, your site, this first time in 20 years, I feel like celebrating Halloween again. It makes me realize, you know, this actually does make a difference.
Scoggins says she doesn't mind if some women want to wear sexy Halloween costumes. She just hopes her site will make women feel like they have more options. Because Scoggins says if Halloween were a holiday where a woman's only choice was to put herself on display, that would be pretty spooky. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
Megan Rosenblum spends her days surrounded by books to keep people alive, but the USC librarian also leads Death Salon. It's a collective dedicated to studying death in an academic light. Matthew Tinoco met Rosenblum in the Rare Books Room in the Norris Health Library, where they chatted about death in modern American culture.
When did death start getting a bad rap in the United States?
It got pretty bad around 100, 150 years ago. During the Civil War, when we started embalming bodies because, you know, the Civil War dead were dying away from home, they would embalm bodies so that they could make the trip home to be buried. So trying to make people look as lifelike as possible when they're dead. But it also took the corpse out of the home, because before that time, most people died at home. They didn't die in a hospital. And they were tended to at home for a couple days before they were buried.
What did this do for those exposed to the death?
Everyone had experience with death, but also with actual corpses and being around them. And so they were sad about their family members dying, but they understood kind of what was really happening.
And how are things now in 2013?
Now, everything's so removed, with people mostly dying in hospitals, then the body goes right to a funeral home. It's a lot harder to take the time to process like what that really means. And I think that's sort of why people get really freaked out talking about death, because they haven't had the time or experience to be able to really process what happens.
Now, I know that you also run a collective called Death Salon. How did that come into being?
My friend Caitlin Doty has a group called the Order of the Good Death. And it is a group of academics, artists, death professionals like morticians and things, who are all doing work that thematically addresses death, but also in sort of a death acceptance kind of vein. So we're looking at this list of interesting people and thinking, wouldn't it be great if we could just get together, physically all get together and share ideas and kind of hear from each other. And then it sort of just snowballed immediately from there, and people came from all over the country to come to Death Salon LA. We just had the most interesting speakers, musical performers. We had public events. We had events that were more conference-like.
Why was Death Salon so successful?
Because people are really interested in the topic. People want to engage with it intellectually. I mean, there are a lot of different ways to engage with death. But I think that when you deal with these things intellectually, and also you learn about the history and you learn about different cultures' reactions to it, I think that then you find something that will speak to you to make you a little bit more comfortable with the idea.
That was USC Health Sciences librarian Megan Rosenblum speaking with reporter Matthew Tinoco. Don't be alarmed, my friends, but zombies have taken over. They're in our homes, on our computers and TV sets, and even skating in roller derbies. Victor Figueroa was in downtown Long Beach on Saturday, where zombies took over the promenade.
Brains!
Zombie walks aren't just a national phenomenon. There are walks all over the world, in major international cities like London, Buenos Aires, and Frankfurt. And this past weekend, zombies came to Long Beach. Saturday was the 4th annual Long Beach Zombie Walk Festival, where the undead wanderers got to enjoy their favorite pastimes.
And brains! And brains, brains too. Brains are good!
Actually, just how everybody in the community of Long Beach is getting together, supporting vendors and local businesses, coming out and having a good time for Halloween, a safe, fun time for Halloween.
At the festival, people could get a grotesque zombie makeover, watch a scary movie, or mosh with fellow walkers. Also at the festival was a convention known as ApocaCon. ApocaCon features the work of authors who write apocalyptic fiction. Author Chris Reynolds introduced me to his freakish head model, Fred, the zombie alien.
Yeah, this is Fred here. He's an alien zombie from Caustic World. The plutocracy who live 2,000 feet underground eat humans. And this is a result of alien DNA being infected in humans.
My favorite costume of the night belonged to a couple in which the husband was a zombie chef who was rolling the upper half of his angry zombie wife on a silver platter.
Figured, what do zombies do? They eat people. So I thought I'd be a chef and turn my wife into the course.
And the event wasn't just for adults. There were plenty of kids partaking in the festivities, including a little zombie girl who had devil horns and satanic-looking flesh on her face.
It just started when I was 7. I watched the movie Zombieland, and then I just became in love with zombies, and I was like, I just love zombies.
People in Long Beach had an early start to Halloween, but for those still looking for some zombie action, Universal Studios has a Walking Dead attraction. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
If you're looking to make this Halloween a memorable one, pay attention. Jacob Ellenhorn has the lowdown for events across the city.
As you put on your costumes and prepare your candy, you might want to think about how to make this Halloween the most memorable. Luckily for you, Los Angeles offers a variety of exciting activities to make this Halloween the best ever. Bring your kids and head down to the flats of Beverly Hills, where you can trick or treat at the original witch house from the Hollywood production of Hansel and Gretel, located on Cannon Drive. For a more unique experience, you can head over to West Hollywood for the annual Halloween Carnival. The carnival attracts about 500,000 people and goes up and down Santa Monica Boulevard. Stay for the best costume competition, where they crown the evening's honorary king and queen. The event is free. Just bring your costume and an open mind. If you're looking to scream and squirm between the hours of 7 and midnight, then the Queen Mary in Long Beach is the place to be. Every year on Halloween, the glamorous ocean liner is converted into a giant haunted maze. If the maze is just too much for you, head up to the decks for an all-age dance party and live band performances. If Halloween is just not your thing, you can check out the Day of the Dead tomorrow. The 24th Street Theater is holding an event with live music, food, and a craft station where you can make an altar to honor dead loved ones. These events are sure to set this Halloween apart from all others. Jacob Ellenhorn, Annenberg Radio News.
Tell me just what's your favorite part about coming to the game?
Marquise Lee.
Tailgating.
Getting ice cold lemonade.
Hanging out with people, it's a beautiful day outside, just being outside, getting out of the house. That's my favorite part of the game.
Fitness trainer Alan Ashley suffered a personal tragedy. He decided to start living for something bigger than himself. Zhao Chen brings us his story.
All right, now finish. Wrap it up, wrap it up. 3, 2, 1.
My name is Alan Ashley, and I'm a certified trainer. What we're doing now is we're doing community-based workouts. Working with a trainer one-on-one, it can be very expensive. It can be anywhere from, you know, 50 to 100 bucks an hour or per session. So what we're doing here is we're doing a group workout to make it more affordable for people to get in shape. During our workouts, we utilize all kinds of equipment, from kettlebells to each other. We use the staircases, we use park benches, the hills. I mean, pretty much everything that's in the park, we use it to our advantage.
15 seconds. Come on, push, push, push.
Last year, I had a six-year-old daughter who passed away from cancer. During that time, my older brother actually fell into a diabetic coma.
So it kind of opened my eyes up to make me realize
just how important health is. When my daughter passed away, I received a lot of support from coworkers, from friends and family. And so it was very overwhelming to get such a positive response from people that I felt like I needed to do something to repay the people back. So my way of getting into this was like, hey, you know, I like working out, I'm a trainer, so I'm gonna use fitness as a tool to give back to the community to make a positive impact. Our goal is to open up an indoor facility so that way we can really expand on our offerings. We're going to pretty much donate a large portion of it to a charity. So one thing that's kind of close to my heart is cancer research for children, because I lost my daughter to it.
All right, now we're going to check in with the lovely Rachel Scott to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Rachel?
All right, well, tonight, Halloween may be a chance to frighten, but some say cultural costumes are screaming racism. We'll have details on what Halloween store owners are saying. And one of the biggest parades in the world hits West Hollywood. We spoke with the parade staff and business owners. And tonight, bring on the candy, costumes, and parties this Halloween, but leave the silly string at home. We'll be talking about a new band that's hitting West Hollywood. That's coming up tonight on ATBN at 6.
The Federal Aviation Administration said today that passengers will be allowed to use electronic devices to read, listen to music, and play games during all stages of flight, including takeoff and landing. However, cell phone and internet use will still not be allowed. The changes could take effect as early as tomorrow. All right, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Allison Brett. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment. The newscast producer is the one and only Jerome Campbell. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ryan Bouzion. Stay classy and have a happy Halloween, Los Angeles.